I'm Olivia Allen Price, and this is Bay Curious, the podcast where we answer your questions about the Bay Area. And you have a lot of questions.
Could creating one Bay Area city solve the housing crisis?
What's the history of the Emeryville Shell Mound?
Why is the fog in San Francisco called Carl?
Just this year, you all asked nearly 700 questions. And while we won't be able to answer all of them, we're going to tackle not one or two, but three questions in today's episode. You know, catch up a little. Today, we'll find out why Brisbane is alight with handmade stars, if there really is an island for sale in the bay, and why the Millbrae BART station smells like chocolate? Stick around. Our first stop on today's journey is the city of Brisbane. If you visit during the holidays, you're sure to be dazzled. The hillside is dotted with dozens, if not hundreds, of illuminated five-point stars. Ashley Shively remembers seeing the display while growing up.
My father, who grew up in the city, has noticed this forever. And so every year when we would drive by, he would make sure to point it out.
Ashley loves the stars and wants to know more about them.
My question is, why does the city of Brisbane put up five-pointed lit-up stars?
KQED's Bianca Taylor takes it from here.
I'm in Brisbane at the Festival of Light. It's a very festive scene. Everyone is wearing Santa hats. There are Christmas lights, kids caroling, jingle bells, the whole thing.
Is that it?
Here he comes.
Here he comes!
Santa even showed up in a fire truck. It's also the start of when the town lights all of its stars. I can look up and see in the hills, every house has one. It's pretty amazing. Bay Curious listener Ashley wanted to know, what's the deal with those stars? Why does every house in Brisbane have one? So I talked with Mayor Clark Conway, who has lived in Brisbane since he was born.
It started in 1939 with a guy named Gaynor.
This guy Gaynor, yes, he has one name, kind of like Madonna. He put up a big green star on a house high up in the hills on King's Road. Art Kennedy, who was part of Brisbane's Chamber of Commerce, he liked the stars so much, he told the chamber, okay, next year, we're all building stars.
Chamber was kind of like the de facto political body of Brisbane, so...
A couple local businesses donated supplies, and a few volunteers got to work making the stars.
I guess the first year, and they made 20 of them, handed them out to people, you know, for free. And they still do it to this day.
Mayor Conway says the only time Brisbane hasn't had stars during Christmas was actually during World War II. That's when American cities were ordered to turn off all their lights at night to avoid attracting enemy airplanes. When Brisbane became an incorporated city in 1961...
We became the city of stars because everybody had stars on their house. All they do is they take these thin slats of wood and they drill holes in it and put it together. You know, it's pretty simple, really. I made my own.
Wrap those wood slats up in Christmas lights and voila, a Brisbane star. There's something about these stars that is the essence of the holiday spirit, and they're always given out to Brisbane residents for free. So there you have it. Brisbane's five-pointed stars are a vintage Christmas legacy, a kind of do-it-yourself celebration that's been bringing the city together for decades. If you, like our listener Ashley and her dad, find yourself driving past Brisbane on Highway 101, you can see the stars for yourself, twinkling up in the hills just like they did nearly 80 years ago.
That was reporter Bianca Taylor. In addition to lights and music, the holidays are about food. And you can bet there are a whole bunch of kitchens right now filled with a delightful smell of chocolate. One place you might not expect to find such enticing smells, a BART station. But at the Millbrae station, riders are often pleasantly surprised. Riders like Meredith Kiefer.
It smells like brownies. Some little kid is really missing out on a lot of money because they could totally set up a brownie stand right inside the BART station and get the entire after-work crowd. Smells so good.
Several Bay Curious listeners have asked about the source of these chocolatey smells at the Millbrae station, so we sent reporter Rachel Miro on the sweetest reporting assignment we've ever had.
If you start at Millbrae BART and follow your nose about a half mile south, you'll end up at the source of that wonderful chocolatey smell.
Do you
ever get sick of chocolate?
No.
I start eating chocolate at about 9 in the morning.
That's Amy Guittard, who, along with Gary and Clark Guittard, is walking me through the family-owned chocolate factory in Burlingame. It's like the engine room of an old battleship. If an old battleship smelled like warm chocolate, the machinery for roasting, grinding, and refining is massive, and much of it is more than 60 years old. The original Guittard was Etienne, who came to San Francisco from France during the Gold Rush and quickly realized the big money was in satisfying the local sweet tooth. Today, you can find his company's chocolate bars and chips and cocoa powder in the market, as well as baked into products from big brands like Starbucks, See's Candies, and Shake Shack. And of course, inspiring countless BART commuters to dream of fresh-baked cookies and brownies and chocolate cakes on their way to wherever they're going.
Our question asker, Meredith, had one more chocolate curiosity.
I would like to know what the schedule is, like why some days it smells like chocolate and some days it doesn't.
Amy Guittard says the factory is almost always roasting. It's the wind that determines whether Millbrae smells like the inside of a brownie, and sometimes those aromas get blown all the way to Interstate 280. Local surfers know if 280 smells like chocolate, the winds are right for primo waves. Surf's up, dude. Our final stop is Red Rock Island, which you might have seen while crossing the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge. It's 6 acres of undeveloped paradise sitting in the middle of the San Francisco Bay. It's the kind of island that inspires fantasies and questions, like this one from Eve Kearney.
I think I've always just been curious what the situation with it was. If it was like a bird sanctuary or private. I do remember hearing rumors long ago that it was for sale, which I thought was curious, because how can that be? It's an island in the middle of the bay. So I really just wanted to get more information on it and find out some history there and see what it's all about.
It is privately owned. In fact, it's the only privately owned island in the San Francisco Bay. But is it for sale? And what's its history? KQED's Jessica Plachek did the legwork to find out.
Legend has it that pirates hid treasure on the island, though it's never been discovered. In the early 1800s, Russian fur traders used it as a campsite while killing Bay Area otters. In the 1850s, the island gets its first and only resident. He builds a cabin there and is the son of the poet Samuel Woodworth.
Oh, say, my flattering heart, loves she like me?
Fast forward to 1964. Red Rock Island is purchased by San Francisco attorney David Glickman for just under $50,000. He dreams of turning it into a destination hotel. But that never happens because he gets a taste for the gem trade and moves to Thailand. Soon after, his friend Mac Durning acquires at least part of the island. He doesn't do much with it, visits occasionally, and takes his sons out there. Over the years, other buyers show interest. The most notorious potential owner was Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, the controversial guru with a commune up in Oregon. His followers are most famous for poisoning salad bars with salmonella. The island deal falls through when Rajneesh is deported. In 2007, Glickman and Durning try selling the island for $10 million. Nobody buys. Years pass. Glickman dies. In 2012, Durning tries selling it for $22 million. A few months later, he slashes the price to $9 million. We're told there's interest, but before the island can be sold, Durning dies. Today, the island is owned by his son, Brock Durning, who I reached by phone in Alaska. He confirmed that he owns the island, but he refused to say if the island is for sale or not. So is it for sale? It's not publicly listed. But both his parents were known to say that for the right price, it's always for sale.
We asked our question asker, Eve, what she'd like to see happen to the island. Her answer, either a wildlife sanctuary or a theme park.
Like a Goonies situation. Us folks that grew up in the 80s could like visit it and relive like the Goonies cave.
One potential roadblock to her plan, the island is in three counties, Marin, San Francisco, and Contra Costa. So developing anything, probably a planning nightmare. Big thanks to reporters Jessica Plotcheck, Rachel Miro, and Bianca Taylor. This episode was produced by Ryan Levy. That's a wrap on Bay Curious 2018. This show could not be made without the many talents of the Bay Curious team. That includes Jessica Plotcheck, Ryan Levy, Paul Lancour, Susie Racho, Katie McMurrin, Julie Kane, Pat Yawlin, Carly Severn, Amanda Font, Erica Kelly, Julia McAvoy, David Weir, Ethan Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. Whew. Of course, the biggest thanks of all goes out to you, our wonderfully curious and loyal listeners. This show literally could not happen without you. We are here because you listen. So thank you for subscribing, for reading our newsletter, and sharing us with your friends. It means so much, and we really appreciate it. Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at KQED. I'm Olivia Ellen Price.